Coming up on KUCB News, there would be a high price tag for revamping Captain's Bay Road, and an Unalaska entrepreneur is looking to capitalize on cruise ship traffic. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, February 20th, 2019. Transforming Captain's Bay Road into a safer, smoother thoroughfare would cost about $59 million. Engineers released that rough estimate last week after spending months studying the heavily trafficked gravel road that's home to some of Unalaska's largest businesses. Dave Lundeen of HDL Engineering says the proposal would pave more than 13,000 feet of road from Agnes Beach to Offshore Systems, Inc., extend utilities to the end, and straighten out several sections.
When I say paving, I'm talking about widening to a 30-foot top, so you got a couple of 13-foot lanes, 2-foot shoulders, curb and gutter, pathway, spacing from the tall cliffs so you've got rock fall safety there as well. So it's not just paving, it's upgrading this road and doing some realignments on it.
If funded, Lundeen says the improvements would help Captain's Bay Road to withstand truck traffic from seafood and support sector businesses, as well as to provide safer walking spaces for its many pedestrians. The cost would be high, though, largely because of the resources needed to widen the road.
There's not a lot of design cost in saying put a million yards of gravel here and here's the shape of it. But that million yards of gravel is really expensive.
Mayor Frank Kelty says he's a little shocked by the price tag, even though city officials knew it'd be steep. But he's still hoping Unalaska can find funding for the long-term project.
I don't want to give up just because I see a high price tag now. I think there's a couple of different ways. If there's some infrastructure project in D.C. that we could get in on, maybe use some of our bonding. I don't think the state's in the picture for a while.
The council gave engineers the go-ahead to finish the full design and refine the cost estimate while the city explores how to pay for it. Here's Councillor James Fitch.
I think that we should go with this all the way, too, and do a real good job and not cut back on pedestrian walkways, because if we put this road in here and encourage more business, then we're going to encourage more people.
Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson also supports finishing the design, though he says the city may have to scale back the project's scope and pave less road, depending on how much funding it can secure. The bulk of the design should be done by later this year, and if the project goes forward, the city would expect to work on permitting, right-of-way acquisitions, and construction through 2022. Unalaska's basketball teams are headed to Dillingham for their final games of the regular season. The Raven Invitational marks the first time this year that the Raiders will face off against a 2A team in their region, and girls coach Casey Clausius is looking forward to the matchup.
Dillingham's always a good match every time we play them. Doesn't matter what team is good, what team is bad. It's just been a good overall kind of competitive games that we played throughout the years. We don't know what to expect. They have a new coach, and they have a lot of the same players coming back, so it's going to be a hard-fought game.
The Raider girls are on a 4-game winning streak, heading into their first match tomorrow night against New Stuyahok. Clausius says he's hoping his team will ride that confidence and win the tournament.
We haven't won a tournament besides regions in their career for basketball, so let's go out and try to see what we can do and just play hard and go out and hopefully work together, and you never know what could happen.
Both teams have challenging schedules with 2 games on Friday, but boys coach Riley Spetz says he's not concerned about the doubleheader.
We got some kids who like to go out there and battle a little bit, so there's nothing they would rather be doing than either sitting in the classroom or playing an extra basketball game. So I see it as a big issue. So I know these boys have all played 2 games at one point or another.
The Raider boys are on a 2-game winning streak, and Spetz is looking forward to their games against Dillingham in particular. If they can beat the Wolverines, he says it would be a statement victory.
Offensively, we've kind of slowed our pace down, and you know, we want to make sure that we're still utilizing, you know, our speed and our ability to control the tempo, and We just got to make sure that we understand when we're ruling the tempo and when we're not.
Raider fans can check out KUCB's Facebook page for a schedule of the games that will be broadcasting live. Coverage starts tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 with the girls taking on New Stuyahawk, followed by the boys' matchup against Dillingham at 6. This week, KUCB is profiling the finalists of the 2019 Aleutian Marketplace Competition, which awards grants to aspiring entrepreneurs from the region. Contenders stand to win between $3,000 and $10,000 from the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association. Today, we'll hear from Unalaska's Travis Swangle, who told KUCB's Zoe Sobel about his plan for a bike rental business.
The idea is island bike rentals, and I would provide bicycles for tourists and visitors to rent to explore our community.
And right now, like, what are the options for people if they want to get around and explore Unalaska?
Well, I suppose a person could rent a car, or you could walk around on your own 2 feet. I don't know really any other options right now being offered, but I feel that the bikes are healthy, fun way to explore in Alaska. And I'm hoping other people feel the same way.
Tell me a little bit about the type of people that you think would be interested in bike rentals in Unalaska.
I think the main target is going to be the cruise ship people, just because you got a ship that comes in and you have, hundreds or sometimes more people coming in. And a lot of the times they only have anywhere from, 5 to 7 hours here in the community, and doesn't leave them a lot of time to maybe explore all the things they would like to see. And I've noticed as they walk around, they're always kind of referring to some sort of map and trying to see where they can make it to next. And I just feel that on a bike, they would be able to explore more in their limited time that they're here.
I understand you've applied for funding through APICTA to start a business before, and you were a finalist. Is this proposal different from what you made before, or similar?
More or less, it's the same pitch. I'm leaning towards a high-end kind of bike or an e-bike. I have a couple myself, and I've let many people ride it and try it out, and I can't recall a single person that's came back without a big smile on their face. So, yeah, I just think there's a lot of people that once they get on them, they're going to realize that the e-bike's the way to go.
I mean, I've seen you ride your e-bike around town. You rode it in the Bobby Storrs Half Marathon and destroyed the competition and created a new category. But what's your favorite thing about e-biking?
It just kind of makes it fun all over again. I don't know. I don't know if you remember as a kid, like the first time riding a bike. I know I do. And it was pretty liberating and pretty exciting, And after all these years, jumping on a bike, it kind of makes you feel like a kid again. But I have to say, when you jump on an e-bike and it just takes off with little effort, it's pretty exciting stuff.
Everyone participating in this competition is going to walk away with some money. Do you know what you would plan to use it for?
One of the big purchases, I think the key for this business to work is going to be having a trailer to store the bikes in, and it's basically a mobile platform for the business, and I think that's key, and that's probably what the money would be going to at first, is to purchase the trailer and put a wrap on it.
Even just this year, Unalaska has a lot more cruise ships coming in. It sounds like that is a really big... It could be a very big industry for the community, and maybe your business could go side by side with that.
Yeah, there's, as of now, I believe there's 20 cruise ships scheduled for this year, which is a record for Unalaska. I feel like there's a lot of potential there. Obviously the bike rental was just one idea, but yeah, it'd be great to see, some other businesses start up and start taking advantage of these visitors and maybe start growing the local tourism industry and help diversify our economy here. I think it'd be great.
That was Travis Swangle of Unalaska speaking with KUCB's Zoe Sobel. Tomorrow we'll hear from the third finalist, Hallie Hanna Stepitin, about her proposed cafe in Akatan. As Alaskans parse the budget proposal by Governor Mike Dunleavy, we've brought you reports on how his plan would affect public schools, fish taxes, and state ferries. Today we have more on the Alaska Department of Corrections, which stands to lose $19 million from its budget. The state would save about $13 million of that total by sending 500 inmates to private prisons outside of Alaska. According to DOC Administrator Sylvan Robb, the cost of housing people out of state is about $95 per day, compared to about $170 per day in Alaska.
The department felt confident that we could find space outside for 500 inmates, and that we could find that number of inmates within the system who would be appropriate to be transferred outside.
If the budget proposal passes, Rob says the DOC would put out a request for proposals to find prison vendors who could house people. She says the department would send individuals who have already been sentenced and who have significant amounts of time to serve to reduce transportation costs. But she could not speak to what else would determine if a person was sent outside or not. Meanwhile, some who have spent time in private prisons out of state say officials need to consider more than finances. Alaskan Carl Vanderherk spent 6 years in Arizona prisons in the late 90s and mid-2000s, where he says he started a gang.
You start learning new criminal ways out there. You start, you know, it's kind of lawless. The staff members don't get paid enough. You know, they're pretty much minimum wage, so, you know, they're easy to talk into bringing the dope sack.
Vanderherk is now part of a Christian-based treatment program at the Anchorage Correctional Complex, but at the time, he says the loneliness of being far from family and the easy access to drugs had a very negative effect on him and others.
To put us all out of state was not smart. We came back seasoned criminals. We all came back heroin junkies. We all came back with hepatitis.
Dunleavy's other big cost-saving strategy for the DOC is to close half of the Wildwood Correctional Center in Kenai, which houses and provides programming for inmates who are serving their sentences. That closure would eliminate 46 state jobs and save about $6 million. As for local ramifications of the Dunleavy budget, it's still unclear if UNICE will be able to participate in a work release program that was expected to employ 4 inmates at its Unalaska fish plant this winter. UNICE officials say they've reached out to the Dunleavy administration to get an answer either way, but have not yet received a response. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., President Donald Trump declared a national emergency last week to get money for a border wall that Congress has refused to fund. Trump's chief of staff told reporters he'll divert $3.6 billion from military construction accounts to do it. But as Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, that could drain money from projects in Alaska.
This was exactly the scenario Senator Lisa Murkowski was worried about when Trump first floated the idea of an emergency declaration. Murkowski said last month she worried about Alaska's military construction projects, like the money Congress appropriated to prepare for the arrival of F-35 aircraft at Eielson Air Force Base near Fairbanks and the installation of a new radar system 100 miles away at Clear.
I have very serious concerns about why we would be seeking to take funding from those accounts that we have already identified as enhancing our national security.
Murkowski told reporters Thursday she doesn't think the border situation should be declared a national emergency. Alaska has hundreds of millions of construction dollars on the line, money Congress allocated for projects at Clear, Eielson, and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Jim Dodson directs the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. He says he's tried to find out if any of the Eielson money is in jeopardy, but no one seems to know yet. Dodson says Eielson is expecting the first of the F-35s in the spring of next year.
The facilities to take care of and maintain and support, you know, that activity has to be here.
By Dodson's estimate, roughly $300 million has been allocated for Eielson construction projects that has not yet been given out in contracts.
It would be hard for me to believe that the Eielson construction money got caught up in this building the wall issue.
Alaska Congressman Don Young posted a statement on Facebook saying he supports increased border security, but he's concerned about the president's emergency declaration. He says targeting military construction funds could be bad for Alaska and for the military mission. Young also says the president's decision to redirect money weakens the authority granted to Congress in the Constitution. A spokesman for Senator Dan Sullivan says he's waiting to see the details of the president's emergency declaration before offering an opinion. The president's declaration nearly overshadowed the spending bill Congress passed Thursday. The bill includes full funding for a polar icebreaker, the first Coast Guard icebreaker in more than 40 years. Murkowski says the bill also has money for Coast Guard housing and other infrastructure, $22 million for Kodiak and $31 million for Seward. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.